Good morning, everybody. Another beautiful May day. Following yet another beautiful May day yesterday. And Dharma talks, I realize, are a way for the speaker, myself, to clarify something, to learn something, to teach myself a lesson. So the lesson this time was trust. Because, you know, we hear over and over, trust yourself. This is what comes up when it's time to prepare a talk. We have all these voices. I have nothing to say. A voice that says, just try and be helpful. A voice that says, give me a break, would you? And so trust yourself. Easy to say. Except we know from Buddhism 101, the self is not the contents of our mind. So that was reminder number one to myself. And then I had these associations or images, for some reason, of stories of the early Christians. You know, as a child, I was very impressed. Stories of Christians being walking into the lion's den fearlessly. They had a choice to supposedly not say they were a Christian. But over and over, apparently for hundreds of years until Christianity was legal in the Roman Empire, people died for their faith. So you have Daniel in the lion's den. The emperor was not pleased that Daniel worshipped someone besides himself, and so threw him into the den of lions. And the next day, apparently, the den was opened. Daniel emerged unscathed. The lions hadn't touched him. And then my own namesake, St. Barbara. This is Nicomedia, 3rd century, what's in present-day Turkey. Her father was a Roman consul. And he didn't like the fact that she had converted. And tried to get her to renounce her embracing Christianity. Mm-mm. And so he simply beheaded her. When Rome burnt during Nero's reign, apparently he blamed the Christians. And so arrests and executions followed. And again, these deaths were not pretty. Here's Tacitus reporting, some were covered with the skins of wild beasts and left to be eaten by dogs. Others were nailed to the cross. Many were burned alive and set on fire to serve as torches at night. So when we read about the fundamentalists in Nigeria abducting young girls for the crime of wanting an education, or in Afghanistan throwing acid in their faces, it's like reminded of the same stories throughout history. The same stories of savagery and brutality. And evidence of enormous courage. Just this morning, Nicholas Kristof reminded us of some of the real heroes in the Tiananmen Square massacre. He himself witnessed these rickshaw drivers. And the soldiers were shooting the students. They were falling, bloody, wounded. These rickshaw drivers would drive, go right into the melee, pick up the bodies, and drive them off to the hospital. So again, risking their own lives. And so again, we ask the question, this idea of trust. Clearly, these people are not locating their safety simply in terms of their own bodily survival. So, what is there to trust? And what does trust encompass? You see, if it's on the one hand, you see fearlessness, and on the other, a sense of just not being obsessed with one's own idea, you see, of a self. To give you an example, yesterday I was at my desk trying to complete 3 deadlines. 2 new courses I'm teaching this summer, and I just realized, oh my God, the deadline is in 48 hours and I haven't started work on this. I also had a Dharma talk. Outside, it was glorious. And besides this panic and stress, I noticed this resentment. And of course, the panic and stress is induced by, okay, these obligations, but also mixed in with the sense of, I have to do a good job. My reputation depends on it. Even though I know a syllabus is not the class is bigger, more freewheeling than the syllabus. A talk, well, you could just sit and dialogue with people, actually. So after a couple of hours of this, I told myself, I need to get something from the library. Let me just go out, step out for 10 minutes, and I'll come back. Well, when I stepped out and was greeted by this golden, buttery light, it was like I had stepped out of the lion's den. And there was a whole world that just simply opened up. And I thought, you know, a little bowl of rice porridge wouldn't go badly. Somewhere on Bowery, isn't there? Couldn't find it. And then, well, in Chinatown. And so I set off on this, what turned out to be an odyssey, with one adventure and one gorgeous, magical encounter after another. It was like each step was inspired. And I was clueless, really, but something was leading me on this beautiful dance with New York, with the Lower East Side, Puerto Rican block party, Tai Chi movement group in Christie Park, handball game at these young Chinese kids, girls better even than the boys, smacking a ball hop against the wall. So over and over, these little feasts. Before long, I'd forgotten all about the deadlines. There was this just beautiful world. Until I got a text that said, your talk, please. For our interpreters, they need something. And that brought me back to reality. But even still, I thought, no, the evening is ahead of me. And something inhabited me that was, it was not defiance. It was trust. Now, here's something from Agnes Martin. For those of you who don't know her, an artist who was part of the art scene in the 70s, quit and took herself off to an adobe house in New Mexico where she lived virtually as a recluse until she died, I think, maybe about 10 years ago. And I first discovered her at DIA. Her work is shocking for its simplicity. For this sense of somebody who knows. Somebody who knows and knows how to show what they know. It's breathtaking. Monochromatic, very simple. And I thought, this woman has to know Zen. This is Zen. And it turns out she was. She studied with Suzuki at Columbia and was influenced by Zen. And later, you know, when her work became really known, people started to do interviews, and I think there's a beautiful documentary, actually, on her. And they asked her if she meditated. And she said, that no, since she had learned how to stop thinking, she didn't meditate. And It said something else about that. But here's something else she says. She would give advice to artists. She said, "We each of us feel that our life is not like anyone else's life." And that is absolutely true, infinitely true. Because she has this way of talking. It's like this is someone who knows. And then she says, "To live an absolutely original life, one has only to be oneself." In nature, there is no sameness anywhere. There are no two rocks alike, no days alike, no moment alike, even forever. And no two people are alike, or any moment of their lives. And then it follows from this that we cannot help one another since our responses are not alike. So it's an interesting statement. I mean, clearly, she's talking about artists, but we cannot help one another since our responses are not alike. And since we are not alike, the experience of others is no use to us. This is particularly obvious when we wish to know what to do. We are all born with a certain potential. It is different from that of anyone else, and it is necessary to life. We must unfold our potential as a contribution to life. We are born to do certain things, and we are born to fill a certain need. And she says, for example, if there's a bare spot on the ground, the best possible weed for that environment will grow. In the same way, our lives are created out of necessity, and we are created with the potential to meet the necessity. The Zen master Uman said, "Each of you has a light. When you look, you don't see it. So it is obscure. What is your light?" And then he goes on to answer, "The kitchen pantry, the main gateway." And then he also says, "A good thing can't match nothing. A good thing can't match nothing." So we try to see our light, okay? Ooh, good teacher is someone who puts a good syllabus together. You know, a Zen teacher is someone who has a talk that makes sense, that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And as we know, in the meantime, life takes us along its creative current, and it does us. Kalu Rinpoche, "You live in confusion and the illusion of things." He the illusion of things. See? Separate. This is good, this is bad, this is that. Me here, you're there. Things, the illusion of things. There is a reality. You are that reality. And when you know that, you know that you are nothing. And in being nothing, you are everything. And that's all. So the Emperor Nero, the fundamentalists, and all the tyrannical dictators of all time, are missing trust. Their lives composed of fear on one end and pride on the other. Reputation, control, something to defend. And so we see in the scale of things how, in my own life, how that little dictator, that little emperor, that tyrant that insists on things being the way she thinks they ought to be, so she looks good, different scales, but same seed. Versus the openness, the courage, the clarity of people who find themselves in moments of history where it is not simply about their own physical immediate safety. The schoolgirl who decides to risk her life to go to school is clearly not only thinking of passing the primary grade exam, she's thinking larger, larger dimension. She's seeing that in this course of history, this is her contribution, that she must play. What is that self, and what is your light? I will end with W.S. Merwin, who has he just has a way with language. This one is called Lakeshore in Half Light. There is a question I want to ask, and I can't remember it. I keep trying to. I know it's the same question it's always been. In fact, I seem to know everything about it. All that reminds me of it leading to the lake shore at daybreak or twilight, and to whatever is standing next to the question as a body stands next to its shadow. But the question is not a shadow. If I knew who discovered zero, I might ask what there was before.